on the front line of freedom. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and our conversation with an amazingly energetic 94-year-old from Las Vegas, Nevada, originally from Brooklyn, New York. Let's pick up where we left off with Jerry Countess, a World War II veteran from the 1st Infantry Division.
When you ship out, you're still a young man. You probably didn't really even know where you were going.
Nope, I did not know where I was going.
You hadn't had really any training for combat.
Correct.
But you know you're going to war somewhere. What is going through your mind? What do you think your expectation was?
I don't know that I had any serious expectations. We all knew we were going to war. We didn't know quite where. Halfway along the way, somebody spread the word that we were going to North Africa. I didn't even know there was a war going on in North Africa. At that time, the landing in North Africa took place only a month before we were going.
Mm-hmm.
So most of the world didn't even know that 80,000 American troops and a couple hundred boats landed on the shores of North Africa and conquered that. That was in the hands of the Germans. The French and the Italians had been in charge of that area. The Italians gave it, under Mussolini, became part of the German army. The French, yeah, what am I going to tell you about them? They didn't like the Germans any more than the Italians because the Germans abused them. They really were unkind to these guys. These guys could have been very helpful to them, but they antagonized them so much that these guys really were not unhappy when the United States troops landed. So they fought, but not with full ardor, you know.
Well, and you've got a story in your book about that, about you coming across a couple Italian soldiers who you took prisoner, but they were pretty happy to see you.
They were very happy to see me.
Before we get to that, so you are put into the 1st Infantry Division, and folks probably have heard about the Big Red One, and they probably associate...
I had never heard of it in my life.
You hadn't, but I'm saying now people, all these years later, if they hear about the Big Red One, they probably think, okay, Omaha Beach, D-Day. That would be one of the famous spots. Maybe they don't realize that so many of you were in North Africa fighting the Germans down there. And what was your baptism by fire, if you will, your introduction to combat?
I had never fired a gun at anybody. I didn't know anything. Nobody really wanted to tell me and the two or three other recruits about what was going on because they didn't expect us to survive much. So the first, we were maybe 4 or 5 days in the outfit trying to find out something, and all of a sudden, some guy comes along, tonight you're going to combat. What does that mean? I don't know. Get dressed, put on your overcoat, because it was pretty damn cold in North Africa. People didn't think so. And we're going to take you in your fire. We want you to see if you can capture a couple of guys for interrogation, but you also got to fight these guys. Everybody said, okay, we're going to go. What are you going to do? So I got into a 2.5-ton truck with all the other guys. Pitch dark, didn't know where the hell we were going, and the trucks don't drive with lights on. So we didn't know where we were going. There was nobody in the truck with authority who could tell us where we were going. We got there, the truck stopped. What I didn't know at the moment that it stopped was that there was a whole line of trucks there, maybe 25 or 30 of them, I don't know, filled with soldiers. Truck stopped, the back panel of the truck went down. We all jumped out on the ground in our overcoats, in our helmets, with a rifle I had never used, I had never shot before. We stood, the trucks drove away. So we're standing there, and along comes the sergeant major, comes running down the thing. Okay, we're going to attack in 5 minutes, fix bayonets.
Yeah.
I said, what, are they broken? The guy next to me, standing next to me, just looked at me and had no use for me whatsoever. And I'm watching, and all of a sudden I see, you couldn't see more than 10 feet, 15 feet. But the guys I could saw, all had their rifles with the butt on the ground, and they had a bayonet on top of it. And I looked at that, and I said, where'd you get the bayonet? And they said a few words, which I won't talk about. And the guy came over to my backpack and pulled out a bayonet from my backpack. I didn't know it was in a sheath on my backpack.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. He gave it to me. What do I do with it? It's not broken. How can I fix it? He had a few words to say. But he took that and he clamped it down on top of the gun. And if you push it down, it clicks and it's secure. Okay, where are we going? There.
Just pointed a finger into the darkness.
Pitch dark. Okay, I figure whatever they're going to do, I'm going to do. So we face this way, and instead of being behind each other, we're alongside of each other. We heard the word attack, and he says, run. You're wearing an overcoat that's down to your knees. And I don't know how much it weighs, but it certainly had to weigh 10, 15 pounds. Hotter than hell. And you start running with an overcoat, with a gun. You're carrying a gun in your hands, and you don't know exactly where you're going or what you're doing or who you're going at. But that we couldn't see an enemy. Well, we start to charge. After 5 minutes, nobody was running. And we're walking. And where are we going? We don't know. Does anybody have a map? Nobody has a map. What are we going to do? Where are they? Who's we shooting? So we walked, and the other guys are beginning to feel as stupid as I did. And suddenly, out of a clear blue sky, we're up against a barricade. We thought it was a barricade. It was a mountain, almost vertical in front of us. Okay, so now what do? Sergeant said, climb it. Are you crazy? Well, as it turned out, I was with two or three or four other guys. We worked together as a team. Two guys held the rifles. One guy climbed up as far as he could climb, maybe 6, 8, 10 feet. We handed up the rifles, and we followed him up to the ledge. Then another guy would take the guns, and another guy would go up 6 feet, 5 feet, 8 feet, whatever amount of feet. But we were in overcoats. The third time around, most of those overcoats fell to the ground. Not all. At any rate, we kept doing that. We didn't hear any shots. We didn't hear firing anywhere. But we were attacking, and we didn't know who or what. When it became my turn, I went up, and I get on, I climb up a bit, and I get my hands on, and it's a ledge. Wow, a ledge. And I pull myself up a little bit, and when I get up about this high, there's a face on the ledge looking at me, and I'm looking at it, and he's smiling. And I notice that his helmet is not an American helmet. There's an expression I could use, but I won't. I don't have my gun. The gun's down there 10 feet below me. Here is this guy. I did recognize the fact that his hat was an Italian hat. But I know that they're the enemy. And he smiles, and he says, come on. He doesn't say. He gestures.
Gestures you with his hand to come here.
And I'm looking down. I don't have a gun, and this guy is laying there. And I don't know if there's other guys up there. I didn't know what to do. He leans over, grabs the back of my coat, and pulls. And I come up on the ledge. I figure, well, now he's going to shoot me or something. No. He looks down, and he sees the other two. He goes like this. Come on up. I leaned over, and I told him, come on up as fast as you can and bring my rifle. They came up the way I went up, you know. They got onto the ledge. This guy was standing there and smiling and talking, kamerad, kamerad. And the only thing we knew in German was kamerad, which means I give up.
Uh-huh.
While we're doing that, a guy comes out. It turned out there was a little cave up there. A guy comes out, and he's dressed somewhat differently. Much nicer uniform, and he has a pistol. He doesn't have a rifle. And he comes over and smiles. He says, me camarade, come. It took a little conversation and waving of the hands to realize that they wanted to give up. If he wanted to shoot, we would have been dead a long time ago. All they had to do was push us off that damn cliff, and we would have been dead. They wanted to be taken as prisoners. Well, that was exactly what we were supposed to be doing. Okay, so what do we do? He said, he took us into the back, and there was a little stove on a tripod about a half a foot tall. Coffee made. I don't know. He said it was coffee. And it was hot. That was all that counted. So the three of us dragged, and we didn't know what should we do with our rifles. They weren't concerned about that. They didn't care. He says, okay, we go down. I said, we're not going to be able to go down this ledge. Climbing up was easy, but going down, he said, no. And he pointed over there. Over there was about 10 yards away from us. There was a path going down the side of that mountain to the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And we had climbed up the way we did. So we understood that we got to find some group of people from intelligence who would take him over and get what they wanted. The guy said, you go down with him. You are the one who got this? Fine. You have the right to go down. I went down, and the two of them, I followed them down. I was in the back, not in the front. They walked down, I walked down. We ultimately got to the ground, found some American soldiers, told them I was looking for intelligence. They told me to go here. I went here. They told me to go here. And the two guys followed me everywhere. You know, it was like a trio. Finally, some people said, oh, intelligence is right over there. So I went with the two guys. I saluted the captain. And I told him how happy we were. He said, these are the first prisoners anybody ever captured. I said, wow, that's great. And as soon as I say that, the captain puts his hands inside his blouse and takes out a pistol. I thought our captain was going to crap in his pants. The guy is 5 feet away from him. He's got a pistol. The guy takes the gun, turns it around, and hands it to him. He looks at me. I said, they don't want to fight. They just want to be prisoners.
So they were upset with you for not having confiscated his pistol.
This guy said a few things that fortunately the Italians didn't understand. And he said, the next time you have any kind of relief, I'm going to find you and you're going to pay for this. And I want to tell you that that's what happened. Maybe 10 weeks later, I don't know, somewhere in that neighborhood, we were taken out for, they call it rest and rehabilitation. It's not, it's just recharging of the, you know, if you have your stockings with the holes in them, they gave you stockings. If you had underwear, you got a piece of underwear. And we were doing that. We're sitting on the ground doing it, and this captain came down with two guys with him, and they took my backpack, and they filled it with stones. And I put it on, and I had to walk for 2 hours up and back along the shoreline. And his guy stayed there to make sure that I did it.
All his punishment for putting his life at risk by bringing in a prisoner who was still armed.
That's absolutely correct.
Uh-huh. And you told me one of the reasons that you wrote this book, and this book, Letters from the Battlefield in Love and War, it's comprised of letters that you wrote to Ray, who you talked about, who you were in love with, who said she wouldn't marry you before you went overseas, and also to another friend of yours, and there are letters that were written to you as well. And it tells a lot of these stories, but you said one of the reasons you wrote it is you want people to know what it's really like out there. Not necessarily the guts and the glory and the combat, but the day after day of life that changes the way you see your existence.
Well, it was early on. Later on, I was able to write that because I knew, not exactly, but I had lived through the business of what it was like. The first thing you do when you stop walking, the absolute first thing you do, even if you're only going to stop for 2 or 3 hours, you dig a foxhole. Invariably, the Germans held a higher level, and you fought to take it. When you took it, then you went forward again. You're going down the mountain. You went up a one. They were higher. So they could see, not well, but they could see how many troops there were and what was going on. So if you stopped on a mountain ridge or you stopped in a low place, you were pretty sure that the Germans higher than you were watching you with glasses, telescopes. So you dug a foxhole. I was very lucky. I was short. I could dig a foxhole faster than the tall guys. We all carried the most important instrument, a shovel, about a foot and a half long, but it had a head about this big. The purpose of that shovel, as soon as you stopped, you reached behind you, uncorked it, and you started digging. If you were lucky, you were digging in sand. But in the mountains, you weren't digging in sand. So digging a foxhole was a very arduous thing.
But that could be the difference between life and death.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. The purpose of a foxhole is to keep you below the level where shrapnel flying this way can't touch you. But if you were out of that foxhole, shrapnel flying at the height of a half a foot or a foot or whatever, you would be touched, seriously.
And I'm sure you saw some friends that that happened to.
At one time, we did something we never did. It was so bloody cold up in the mountains that three of us got together and we decided we were going to dig one foxhole for the three of us because we would be warmer. And we each had a small blanket in theory that was supposed to be a tent half. So it would kept us warm. We were once bombarded by the Germans and two of the guys with me, both of them were hit by shrapnel. Not terribly, enough to send them to the hospital.
In the same foxhole as you?
One very minor, the other one with a serious piece of shrapnel on his back.
You have here in your office a Purple Heart, a Silver Star, Bronze Star. Those all took place because of what you did over there. And the Purple Heart indicates that eventually you were wounded as well. Tell me the story about the Silver Star, because you actually wrote about it in a letter to your love back home in the States. And that letter is part of your book here, Letters from the Battlefield in Love and War.
In a real big war, I probably wouldn't have gotten a Silver Star for that. The reason I got a Silver Star was because of what I did, who I rescued. This was relatively early on. I was in the Army maybe a month or 2 months. We were supposed to be going to an area where we knew the Germans were. We were going to try to surround them and go around on each side of them. So my group went left. All of a sudden, out of a clear blue sky, I'm all there by myself. Where did everybody go? Where was left? I saw a trail, theoretically, not a real foot trail, but I saw steps on. And I was starting to go in that direction. To my right, there was a high sloping piece of ground. And then on top, there were strange looking things which I couldn't identify. I didn't know what they were. I started to make the left move, and I heard a voice. And I looked in front of me where I heard the voice, maybe 50 yards in front of me, maybe that far. And the guy called and he said, "Hey, who is it?" And I said who I was. It was the first sergeant of my company. Now, that's the highest rank you can get outside of an officer. Tough guy, a regular Army guy. He knew what he was doing. He said, hey, who was it? And I said, Jerry. Oh, he said, okay, you got to get me out of here. What does that mean, get me out of here? How do you do that? Well, there's a machine gun up there. They dug a hole, and they had a machine gun up there, maybe 200, 250 yards away, uphill. Mm-hmm. He said, they have tried twice to get me. He said, I have a rock here that I'm behind. He said, the rock is only a foot and a half tall and maybe 2 feet wide. He says, if they hit that rock often enough with their machine gun, that rock is going to go to pieces and I'm going to be dead. He said, get me out of here.
So how would Jerry pull that off? We'll find out when Hometown Heroes comes right back after this.